Last Word on Today FM.
Michael Foley, sports writer with the Sunday Times. Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star, with us to go through the best sports books of the year. And it's rare, I think, Michael, for an Irish book to win the William Hill Sports Book of the Year. But Conor Nyland's The Racket, I think, was an outstanding choice.
Absolutely. I think it's only the second one to do it. I think Rough Ride by Paul Kimmage back in 89, maybe, or 1990, would have been the only other Irish.
I think there might be one other, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Eamon McGee's book.
Yes, Kieran, yeah.
Paul Gibson, the boxing book.
Yeah. That's right, Eamon McGee. Sorry, you're dead right. But The Racket came out earlier in the year. I mean, we're kind of, I suppose, conditioned now to sports was just coming in a kind of a deluge around October, November. But The Racket came out in kind of midsummer. And I remember I picked it up and, very, very quickly into this book. You knew, first of all, it's very special. And second of all, it's going to be the best Irish sports book of the year unless something extraordinary comes out.
But what was it about it for you that made it so special?
I suppose when you're looking at sports stories, I suppose we're conditioned a lot of the time to look at the giants and at the successful people and the stuff that goes well and how it went well.
Which is a lot of the books we're going to be talking about.
Well, it is, and it's the nature of the beast. They're the ones that people are drawn to naturally. You know, they want to read about the big names. But something like The Racket, I mean, you're talking about Conor Nyland, who, you know, by any measure, one of Ireland's greatest tennis players. And certainly in the last, certainly since the 1890s when Ireland used to be very competitive at Wimbledon and things like that. But like in the modern era, you know, comfortably one of Ireland's greatest tennis players, living on the fringes of the elite. And it's always those stories just on the edge of nearly making it that are fascinating because they're close enough. I mean, he's a, you know, tremendously talented sports person and yet close enough to real life and that the harshness of trying to make it in that kind of really, really merciless environment that gives it its edge. And then on top of that, for me, the writing, the style, the quality.
Were you helped by Gavin Cooney, I think, as well, in relation to that?
Yeah, I mean, Conor would have an academic background in writing.
English literature.
And Gavin would have been huge. So, I mean, basically, to put the two of those together, I mean, Gavin's tremendously talented writer. Conor, extremely, I mean, I interviewed him after the book came out. Very, very eloquent guy. So well able to tell his story.
Absolutely.
So when you put the two of them together, you're hopefully going to get something special. And really, it's such a lovely book to read.
I think, Kieran, that was up near the top of your list as well, wasn't it?
It might well be the best Irish sports book of the last 10 years. It's comfortably one of the best I've ever read. And, you know, I can only echo what Michael was saying there, that, to me, Gavin Cooney is the best Irish sports writer under 40 in Ireland. And maybe,
I love you where you draw that distinction, under 40,
But what I mean is to have emerged in the last 20 years.
Okay. Like,
that sounds like I'm excluding for all the greats are over 40. That's not what I'm
That's true, though.
But what I mean is, like, if you and I would broaden that out, looking at those in the UK as well. And I think often the test is how you cover big events. And when he the US Masters in Augusta, when he's gone to the Olympics, the World Cup in soccer, his piece has been on a par or better than anybody there. Like, I think he's incredible. But I think I would also, you know, we mentioned the writing and, you know, that's a combined enterprise. But I think also Penguin Sandy Cove deserve enormous credit for taking it on. Because, they published Johnny Sexton's book as well. You go to a publisher, whether it's your agent or you're a writer yourself, and approach them, and you say you've Sexton on board, they'll be banging down your door. You know, they will offer you a contract. But you're going with a guy that a lot of people have never heard of, that didn't win the big prizes, didn't even compete for anything close to the big silverware. So that can be a harder sell, but I think...
And sorry, Kieran, the point I thought that Michael made as well, I think when people think of tennis autobiographies, they're going to compare to Andre Agassi, one of the greatest sports biographies ever written.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is a high standard, but like Michael, I'll tell you this as well, often the most interesting interviewees and books are individual sports people, that I think people in teams sometimes are a little bit hamstrung by the nature of dressing rooms, and that... Strangely, a few months after Conor retired, he did a couple of comps for us, two or three during Wimbledon, and I ghosted them. And I had a quick look back at them there, and there weren't anything special, I have to be honest, but there was one that stood out. And it was just about the oddity of the tennis life at his level. You share the changing room with the fellows who basically you're battling, you're scrapping for your livelihood. Like before you play them and after, you're in the same changing room. You often stay in the same hotel. You travel in the same flights to get the same bus to the venue. So it's very, very different kind of life. And what I liked him as well, there's a wry sense of humour that comes across. Like there's things like he played a set against the 15-year-old son of one of his sponsors. And like what goes through his head then, you know? If he hammers him, how will the sponsor feel? Will he think I'll drop this guy? If he lets the son be competitive, is the sponsor going to look at him and say, "What the hell am I giving this chap money for?"
Yeah, there's some interesting. It's interesting this year. There are some themes that go through a lot of the books we're going to talk about, and one of the things that struck me is the psychological hardship, really, of being a professional sportsman or at least an elite sportsman if you talk about GAA. But in Conor's case, he struggled a lot with the psychological hardship of being on tour and the fact that the relationships were so transactional. You know, you're kind of, there's no depth, there's no rooting there. It's literally, you're on for yourself. I mean, he tells a story. I remember asking him, and it's in the book as well, about his worst trip, because some of the trips he described, you know, there's a 7-hour taxi ride across Uzbekistan to get to an event. He's in Delhi watching people throw stones at the snakes to keep them off the court. It's not Roland Garros and, you know, Flushing Meadows and all the rest of it. But he'd won his title. He'd won his second title, I think, on the Challenge Tour in Salzburg. He had 36 hours to get to Japan to his next event. Won the first round, lost the second round to a player ranked 300. And Conor had a sore hip and he was, but still he had just won something and he went on Facebook or something and it was just abuse, absolute abuse coming at him for losing. And you're kind of going, it's such a, even when he achieves, it's not enough, because our understanding of achievement is so high. The general public's understanding of achievement is so high that to try and make sense of someone winning on the Challenge Tour and what that means. And I mean, he played at Wimbledon, played at the US Open. I mean, there's a chapter on his match at Wimbledon, which is outstanding. And, you know, the story of him playing Novak Djokovic as well. It's just a superb book.
Okay, that's our first choice. There's been a couple of very good GAA books, which I know both of you have listed and you want to talk about. Kieran, will you start with Joe Canning, My Story?
Yeah, Joe Canning, bringing in the ghostwriter as well. He has Vincent Hogan, who, you know, another outstanding sports writer.
Slightly over the age of 40.
Slightly over the age. I won't say how far over it, but Vincent might fail you at some time.
Who's a great writer, and I say I worked with him many, many years ago in the Irish Independent, and he's a terrific writer. In fact, his Paul McGrath book in particular from many years back is a standout as well.
Yeah, and that would be a lot of people's choice as the greatest ever Irish sports book, and I would have it up there too. But I always thought this was coming, this collaboration, because he did two interviews Vincent did two interviews with Joe while he was at the Irish Independent, and they were incredible. They were two of the best GAA interviews of recent times. He was so open and engaging and interesting. And one of the reasons I was curious with this, because funnily enough, books about hurling often mirror the sport in that there's traditional big three counties of Cork, Tipperary and Kilkenny, and the vast majority of the books about hurling have been about those three counties. There haven't been that many. There have been some, all right, and some significant ones, but there haven't been that many of the kind of the outsider counties. And I get that kind of, the impression I got of this book is that Joe is an outsider, or he kind of sees himself in that kind of way. I think that's a Galway hurling thing, because even within the county, the hurling parts are outside of, you know, largely football county. It's a hurling county in a football province, and now it's a hurling county transplanted into a different hurling province. So I think that thing comes through. One of the things that really, one of the funniest lines is there's a fair bit of score settling and you know, things that wound him up. Sports psychologists will tell you negative motivation doesn't work. But it's clear, like, in both of Johnny Sexton and Joe Canning books, that they use a lot of it. But there's things like, I had to laugh because there was one article and was something at the start of the year, and it was hurlers with a point to prove, and there was a list of five or six hurlers, and Joe was included in that. And I know those kind of articles. They're filler in a quiet day on a very quiet time of year. And, you know, it's what Micheál Omarjeharthy used to call winter talk. But he really took that at heart. He kept the clippings. And his father came out with the best line in the whole book. Sean Canning said, "Joe, not everybody can be a prick."
Richie Hogan's book, I loved, Michael. I spent time with Joe and Richie. I did an event with them to launch the books in Croke Park, which is actually available on the Magnified podcast series if people want to listen to the two lads telling their stories. But Richie's book, I think, again, is an extraordinarily good book, Michael.
It's been a very good book for autobiographies, in fairness. Oftentimes we come on to these kind of shows and you're complaining about the amount of autobiographies you have to trudge through, but it's been a good year. Canning, very good. As you say, excuse me, Richie Hogan, kind of in a way, there are similarities in the sense that Joe was a monstrously talented hurler who was expected to be a great from about the time he made his first Holy Communion. And Richie Hogan wasn't too far off it. And there's a nice little line towards the beginning kind of comparing sort of, you know, I suppose, if you're that talented, people kind of assume things come easier to you. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the talk that comes out around leaving sort of time every year, that look, if it doesn't work out for you, there's always something else. Whereas, like, you know, what about the guys who are really good in school and do really good at the leaving? Are we kind of saying, so Richie's in the same boat. He's kind of saying, I'm really, really good at hurling, but I have to work really hard at this. Don't assume that it just comes easily to me. And it's a great document. I mean, a little bit like the Irish rugby team, there has been a share of books, as Kieran mentioned there, particularly from the big counties, but Kilkenny, there's been a share of books. But this is an interesting one. Quite apart from Richie as an outstanding hurler, it kind of gives you another kind of insight into late-era Cody, into kind of how hurling was changing and the tension between the likes of Richie, who would have seen that we need to change to keep up with the times, and Cody kind of pushing back. And that tension, it's really well put together by Fintan O'Toole as well with him. Yeah, it's a really good read.
I'm just going to mention one that isn't on either of your lists. I don't know whether you're horse racing fans. I'm not, but I really did take to Davy Russell's autobiography written with Don McLean. In particular, the first chapter on Tiger Roll winning the Grand National, which is absolutely cinematic in the way that it's written. It's absolutely terrific as you go on the back of the horse almost, yeah, with Davy the whole way around the Aintree course. It's absolutely terrific reading. Okay, the Johnny Sexton book, Kieran Cunningham, what did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it, I have to say, and I wasn't sure if I would, because sometimes there is a sense with overkill that there's been too many rugby autobiographies. Like, I remember going through it at the last count of the team that beat Wales in 2009 to win the Grand Slam. I think 12 of them have ended up doing autobiographies.
Okay, I admit I ghostwrote one of them as well.
You're far from alone. Most people have ghosted one at this stage. But what's funny, what's kind of interesting about that is O'Gara actually produced two autobiographies, and this is actually Sexton's second, because there was Becoming a Lion a few years ago, and from that title you might think it was a kind of a lion's diary, but it was really covered his career and life up till then. Like, sometimes it can be, you know, the title, you know, talking about obsessed and the kind of that series photograph, you know, close-up facial close-up full-face photograph that's so common sport and biography. Sometimes you think this stuff can be overblown, but with Sexton, it's not. You know, this is the real Johnny Sexton. He is obsessed to the detriment, often, I would think, to his to a lot of relationships of those around him that he's hard to deal with. You know, and there is that line in there, Andy Farrell at one stage says, you know, everybody be yourself except you, Johnny. You need to change. And it's one of the reasons, you know, it goes into it in the book, that he wasn't happy that he didn't get the captaincy after Paul O'Connell. But largely it was because that, you know, Joe Schmidt didn't see him as amenable enough to realise you have to deal with people differently as captain. You can't be, you know, you can't be down hard on everyone, you know. And he learned that a bit more as he was going on. And, you know, he was obviously a brilliant captain under Andy Farrell.
Well, there was a great, there's a great story towards the end of the book about an encounter with himself and John Cooney during an Ireland training session where he just mouths off at Cooney, just gives out to him in a way that Cooney turns around and goes, you can't say that to me. You're Ireland captain. You can't behave that way. And Farrell pulls him aside afterwards and says, you've got to deal with that, you know. So he makes an apology, but, you know, he makes the apology, but he says, I didn't mean it, you know. And this now, by the way, is Johnny Sexton having gone through a period of sort of, you know, gone through the whole mindfulness thing, meditation, he's doing the yoga, he's doing everything to try and kind of mould himself for this, for the latter half of his career, and kind of get away from the chippy persona. And it's like, as I said, there's some trends or themes that go through. Like Joe Canning is a chippy personality. He said himself,
and they're in contact with each other, Joe and Johnny.
Absolutely,
they keep in contact from the last number of years.
That's right. And Sexton, it's such a good book. And
give Peter O'Reilly credit as well for the work.
I was just about to, and I'll declare an interest. I've been working with Peter for decades now. But I mean, what Peter, I think,
which
brings,
means he's also over 40.
He is just about though, barely. Peter started out when he was about 13 or something. But himself and Sexton, now, they've been working on this book for 7 years, which is a long time to be working with somebody on a project, obviously. But there's a kind of a, just Peter's writing style and Sexton's personality, sense of humour, they just merge really, really, really well. And it's such a droll book in places. But what I found in it is, if you've got Sexton almost trying to make sense of himself all the way through the book, why am I so cantankerous? Like, there are so many examples of an episode happens, Johnny loses the rag, says something he shouldn't have done, and now looking back years later goes, I wish I hadn't done that. And like, it's over and over and over again. It keeps going. There's some great, like, you know, there's some new stuff in there as well. People think, oh, I've known the Johnny Sexton story. You don't. There is some new stuff in there. There's a really poignant sort of a storyline through it about the impact of the breakup of his mother and father's relationship and how that impacts on him personally as a personality, but also on his professional rugby life. It's really, I mean, again, a bit like Kieran, I wasn't sure. I knew it was going to be good. None of the people who were involved knew it was going to be good. I didn't know how good. It was excellent. It is excellent.
Okay, there's another one just as an aside. Very unlikely also, Fergal O'Rourke has produced a book, From Rags to Riches, The IRFU Story in the Professional Era. It's only available in Elvery's, but all the money is going to the IRFU Charitable Trust. And it's a terrific, it's got all the stats and the lineups for every game in the Professional Era. And also has a QR code to bring you into all the YouTube videos of the games, which is a great little addition to a book like that.
That's the modern age now, isn't it? That's the way it's going. You need to be interactive in every which way. I love those books, by the way, because, I mean, you know, that's not, you know, that's a fantastic reference book now. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, it's really hard to put together, and it's something that's going to sit on a shelf, but it's just so invaluable for people. At different times they'll pull it down and they'll check records. It's fantastic stuff.
Okay, Kieran, you've got a couple of probably less heralded books, but tell me about Hayley Kilgallen and Unladylike.
Yeah, Hayley Kilgallen, I didn't realise this till I picked up the book, but she's the daughter of TJ Kilgallen, people would remember, who played midfield for Mayo, and also of Eileen, Eileen Magner, who was RT's Northwest correspondent. So she had a journalist back, you know, the journalism was in her genes, and also the interest in sport. She plays football herself in Sligo, and she's doing a PhD in sports history in UCD. And I think it's just, you know, it's an area of growth, and it's great to see new books on it, like particularly the Michael's book, The Bloody Field, about Bloody Sunday, the books of Conor Kern, Paul Rouse, what Mark Duncan has done, Mike Cronin. Like, there's far more material now in sports history than there was there a few years ago, and this is a great addition to it, you know, because the biggest change since I started out in journalism is the prominence of women in Irish sports. like when I started out, like Sonia O'Sullivan hadn't even really, was just about to come on the scene. There was nobody really up to then. And now it's so many of the figures. And this opened my eyes a lot of it. Like there's things like she found reports in local papers of novelty games of women's football being played, places as far apart as Athy and Kildare, across West Cork. But they were seen as a novelty alongside pram races and children's fancy day parades. That was the origins. And one of the things she says is the 70s and the 80s was vital. And, you know, the sport wasn't anywhere at the level it is now, but they kept going. And that, you know, that gave them the platform for where they are now. And they're looking for equality and, supposed to be coming down the tracks, even though there's moaning within the GAA that costs too much money. But it has to come. And I think it's a very important document. And I think it's one of the most important books of the year.
That's Hayley Kilgallen, Unladylike. I think we should also mention, Michael, somebody else who's under the age of 40, regular contributor to this programme on football, Miguel Delaney, has spent a lot of time assessing the sort of the political background to modern day football, political particularly the involvement of nation states and oligarchs in effectively taking financial control of football.
Exactly.
States of play.
Yeah, it's a treatise on how football got to where it is now, and a little bit like Unladylike. These books are really important just to kind of plant a flag and say, right, this is how we got to where we are now. So States of Play does that in a similar way. Now, it is a very dense book. It is a really important book, but it is not something that you approach in a kind of, I'll rattle this one off now, I'll tear through this and it'll be fine. The detail is, it's magnificent. Like, I mean, the amount of work that's gone into this is so impressive. And, you know, when you get into it, I mean, you know, he talks about all sorts of things. I mean, how Manchester City came to be what they are now, the ins and outs of their battles in terms of financial fair play and stuff like that, how he would peg Roman Abramovich taking over Chelsea as the kind of the moment when football went from one thing to another. The detail in some of it is fantastic. I mean, it reminds me, I often say, when you're talking about writing books, I often say, no book ever, very few books start out as a kind of a commercial endeavour. They're a labour of love. And at some point they turn into a labour. And then at the next step is some kind of nervous breakdown. Now, I think, and that's only if you're doing it right. And I think in fairness to Miguel, I have no doubt that he went through all those three stages. It's a really, really good, important gathering together of how football is where it is. The ending is actually quite uplifting in the sense that he says it doesn't have to be as grim as it is, but in an era when we're talking about club World Cups and Saudi Arabia getting World Cups on a nod, this is an important document.
When I was talking about rugby earlier, I should also mention Liam O'Callaghan's Blood and Thunder, which looks at the history of rugby across politics, religions and class for a century and a half. But I want to finish by going to you, Kieran. Pete Carville, Death of a Boxer. What's this?
Yeah, now this is a book that went under the radar a bit, partly because it came out very early in the year. It came out in February, and it's not a great time for book sales. Most sports books especially are geared for the Christmas market. But Pete Carville was an amateur. He's a very talented writer. He was also an amateur boxer, and he boxed until he was 35. After he had a headache after a sparring session, and that he was told it was time to stop. And he started thinking then about why he had this love of boxing. And he's weaved in the story of a Scottish boxer called Mike Towell, who was beaten for the first time in a fight in September 2016. He was knocked out after the fight. He was given oxygen. His brain moved in half an inch, and he died. And he's gone into, like, this sport is horrible and brutal and dangerous, and there's so many reasons to walk away. Why am I captivated by it? And he meets a lot of people around the sport, he has this guilt.
That's Death of a Boxer. Okay, I'm going to have to leave it there. That's Pete Carville. Thank you so much, Kieran Cunningham of the Irish Daily Star, Michael Foley, Sunday Times, for being with us.
The Last Word on Today FM.